A conversation with John Hink, candidate for U.S. Senate. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we continue our series of Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews with John Hink. He's running to take the place of Olympia Snowe as one of Maine's two U.S. senators. Hink currently represents the people of Portland in the Maine legislature. He's an attorney who specializes in litigation on behalf of consumers, workers, and environmental interests. He's taught environmental law at the University of Southern Maine and at one point served as the acting attorney general for the Republic of Palau, a Pacific Island nation. Hink is one of four Democrats running for his party's nod in the June primary election. Join the conversation. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a message to the Maine Calling Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A Your Vote 2012 conversation with John Hink, Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. This is Maine Calling. And John Hink, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Why do you think you'd be the best person to replace Olympia Snowe in the U.S. Senate?
I actually think I have a good mix of experience, both inside of government, perhaps more importantly outside of government, and I have no interest in the perks of office. I'm interested mostly in getting the job done.
First, you have to get through the June primary. What makes you the best choice among Democrats?
It would be the same. I set my compass based on the interests of the ordinary working people of Maine, and I think the Democratic Party is responsive to that. Perhaps all the voters in Maine in the end, by and large, would like to see that.
I have to ask you before we go too far into the long list of issues today, acting Attorney General of Palau, how did that happen?
You know, actually, when I was in law school, I wrote a legal comment on the struggle that this country had. At that time, it wasn't a country yet. The struggle they had to move from being a protectorate to an independent country. And as they continued to have a set of law cases in the Republic of Palau about the issue of their independence, the President's Council found what I had written and thought that it wouldn't be a bad idea to put me on the legal team.
You were also a co-founder of Greenpeace USA and have put environmental issues at the forefront of your career, I think, in some ways. Is the warm weather we're experiencing today that many are enjoying of concern to you?
Yeah, I pay pretty close attention to the science of global warming, and I know enough to be able to say with some confidence we could never attribute individual weather events to climate change. But when you see large-scale changes in the weather patterns, it may well be related to the overall warming of the planet, and I think we've been seeing those.
Is Congress paying enough attention to that issue?
Congress is not paying enough attention to that issue. It's deeply disappointing that they are deeply divided on the subject. But I think it's fortunate that there are a number of things that we can do with our energy equation and with other things that should be done for various reasons, like attaining energy independence, that would also potentially help us address the climate issue.
What should Congress do to, if anything, to lower the cost of energy?
Congress can lower the cost of energy by diversifying our energy sources so that we are not in a hair-trigger world dependent upon a large amount of oil that comes from a few places that are politically unstable.
Do you support domestic oil drilling?
I do support domestic oil drilling because we need to be pragmatic in acquiring the power that is necessary for the country and its economy to operate. However, I didn't mention in the initial answer that we should be putting a tremendous effort in greater efficiency so that we are getting as much work out of every unit of energy that we source. And that would include the oil that we still have within our borders. It would be nice if we could make that last, because digging it up and burning it as fast as we can will not contribute to our economic security.
Would you support the Keystone Pipeline project?
I don't support it.
Offshore oil drilling included in your...
With sufficient safeguards, the offshore oil is valuable and useful. But again, it wouldn't be bad if we kept some in a reserve and turned to it only when we really needed it.
And do you support nuclear power?
I have never been that keen on nuclear power. I'm not. I have trouble with power that we use today that creates costs that we pass on to future generations for thousands of years. That seems immoral. However, there are times when we may need to turn to every source of energy. I do think they should all pay their own costs. So the government should not be subsidizing them with insurance, and the whole nuclear industry would never have gotten going without massive subsidies. That was probably a mistake.
Our guest is John Hink, Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. The number to call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. What can Congress do to invigorate the U.S. economy?
You know, I probably end up agreeing with some colleagues who are seen as being more conservative in that government mostly has to set the framework to allow the great engine of the private sector of the American economy to operate as best as possible. One thing we're not doing sufficiently is taking care of the infrastructure that is required to make that engine work. I'm afraid that the private sector does not do infrastructure as well, and government should be doing that. It is particularly useful to do that when the economy is slow because it's counter-cyclical spending. Of course, we have another problem right now due to bad decision-making in the past, and that's a large deficit in debt. So it makes it very tricky right now.
What about tax policy? Would you support kind of changing the tax policies so that wealthier Americans, for example, paid a higher rate?
Yes.
And can you be more specific about what you would support?
Well, certainly the concept that the very comfortable, the very wealthy should be paying at least the same tax rate as ordinary working people seems so obvious that it's remarkable to me that we've gotten to a situation where it's quite the opposite. It doesn't matter whether it's ordinary income or it's capital gains. There is no reason why somebody who makes millions should pay an effective tax rate of 13.9%, for example, on their income in the year, while I know people that are driving trucks and pay more than 30%, who are teachers and pay more than 30% of their income in federal taxes.
We're going to jump around a little bit because there's a lot to get to, and we'll take your calls in a moment as well. We're talking with John Hink, a Democrat running for U.S. Senate. Do you support the 1973 Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision?
Yes.
Do you support companies who do not wish to cover in their health insurance programs, for example, birth control or other provisions that they might find objectionable?
You know, birth control and contraception is part of women's health care. If somebody has objections to that, it doesn't matter whether they're an employer or not. They could make their own decisions regarding their own health care. The idea that we would limit somebody's health care because of the whims of a third party seems totally wrong to me.
Do you support the Affordable Care Act?
I do support it. It's not what I would have liked to have seen come out of the process in Congress. I think that it's one of the examples of our Congress not getting the job done quite adequately. I feel as though one whole party that failed to participate was a large part of the compromises that were made that made it less effective than it could have been. But as it turns out, the Affordable Care Act will do a lot of good things for the American people, assuming that it is implemented as planned.
If it can't be, because if there are provisions that are found to be unconstitutional, the sort of mandatory element of it that's under challenge, can it survive in another form?
Well, the individual mandate is a big part of the attack against it. By the way, I personally didn't like the idea of the individual mandate myself. I didn't have health care in my 20s. The idea that somebody would have told me that I had to get it with the little money that I had would have been difficult for me. However, it makes it possible for the rest of that act to be adequately funded. And to pluck that out would cause a bit of a problem. I would say the alternative would be possibly a universal single-payer health care. The Veterans Administration in the United States runs such a program rather effectively. But more important, you've got more than 20 countries around the world that have better health care results than we have in the United States, measured by longevity and infant mortality and cost. And most, if not all of them, have universal single-payer health care. I think there's something we could possibly learn from that.
To Social Security, would you support privatization as a way to bolster the system, which some believe is heading toward insolvency, or should it be kept as is?
Well, as a United States senator, I would try always to have an open mind. Somebody brings forward an idea like privatization, I would like to evaluate it. I tell you, from what I've seen of the proposals to date, I'd be highly skeptical. I think, unfortunately, it would put some people at great risk. It seems to me that if we had the best management of Social Security with using the best tools possible, it would function as it has for years, providing a baseline of income for people at a time in their life when it would be hard for them to enter the private market and manage it themselves.
Let's extend the conversation to Medicare, which is also a concern as we as the population gets older and more demands are on this service. What should or can we do to make sure that it's around?
It seems to me that it's possible to do that, but right now, given the deficit and the debt, given the aging population, as you've mentioned, and other challenges we face, we need the best, clearest thinking to come out of Congress on how to protect those vital programs that are earned benefits in many ways for Americans, and also at the same time make sure that we have a budget that is balanced as soon as possible and that we keep it all together.
What about means testing for any of these programs? Do you believe that wealthier Americans as they age might forego some of these benefits to allow those with less money to have them?
I have to tell you, Keith, that means testing sounds like a good idea to me. It fits with the way that I would often approach things. However, I did get a warning from somebody. My mother had a doctorate in economics. She passed away a little over a year ago. But we often discussed economic issues, and this one came up a few years ago. And she would tell me that a lot of the support for Social Security came about because people all felt that they had a stake in it, and it was a widely popular and shared investment in the system. And she said if we did means testing in the wrong way, you would see political support for it erode as fewer and fewer people felt that they had a stake.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions for John Hink, Democrat for U.S. Senate. Share your thoughts. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MainCalling, post a comment to our Main Calling Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Main Calling. We'll be right back.
More than 10 states have introduced bills or passed laws intended to ban Sharia law. Advocates of such bans describe Sharia as a threat to our freedom. But what is Sharia law? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Sadaqat Qadri, who has written a new history of Sharia law. Qadri is a barrister in England who focuses on human rights issues. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air tonight at 7. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Main Calling is made possible by listeners like you and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business. Garand.com. By Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. And by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me.
And welcome back. This is Your Vote 2012 on Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're speaking with John Hink, Democratic Senate candidate. He is currently representing District 118 in the Maine House of Representatives. Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. As you may have heard or not heard, actually, we experienced some technical difficulties at the top of today's show. We apologize for that. The complete interview will be available on our website in about an hour. However, I do want to re-ask John Hink the question we started the show with, which was, why are you the best candidate to be the next U.S. Senator from Maine?
My answer to that is that my candidacy is based on a focus on what would be the best interests of the ordinary working people of Maine. And I honestly think that that really should be the compass for all public servants. However, it seems to me that Congress, the United States Senate, has deviated from that. And it may take somebody with a fresh perspective and a strong attention to how you ensure that our government works for real working people again.
The number once again to join the conversation with John Hink, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You're an attorney. I wanted to ask you another question about a Supreme Court decision, and specifically Citizens United, which, if I can sort of paraphrase the issue, has sort of recognized that or stated that government really cannot or is limited in how it can limit corporate political spending, that there's an equation between free speech and money. Can I get your feelings on that particular decision and what it's meant, do you think, for the political system here in the U.S.?
I think the Citizens United decision was a complete misunderstanding of the First Amendment. As everyone knows, the First Amendment guarantees free speech. If all of us are going to have a meaningful right of free speech, we don't need the government to be protecting the megaphone for the most powerful entities in the country, labeling corporations as people and making sure that they can spend vast amounts of money dominating the airways, dominating politics, is not the way to protect the free speech rights of real people. I think it was, not only misguided, that the decision has done great harm to our political system. And if we don't find a way to counter it and reverse it, it's going to threaten our fundamental democracy.
What could we do, or what could Congress do to stay within the limits of the decision but put boundaries on it?
One thing is the decision itself recognized that we could have greater disclosure of the donations, the contributions that go to politicians. There was put into Congress subsequent to the decision a Disclose Act, and it was filibustered and largely with Republican opposition. Very disappointing. And the senator whose seat I'm looking to take joined that filibuster and opposed the Disclose Act. That would only be a small piece, however. Either the Supreme Court is going to have to reexamine their decision and overrule it, which is possible perhaps just based on looking at the facts. They concluded that there was no corruption from massive corporate spending and there was no appearance of corruption. I think that in the intervening time, they could look at the record and say, we were mistaken when we made that important finding. The other possibility is that a constitutional amendment is put forward and adopted, which clarifies these issues and, for example, makes plain that corporations are not people and sets up a framework in which our elections are not auctions.
Move to foreign policy, if we can. How would you assess the U.S. policy in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, let me put it this way. I think, first of all, that the war in Iraq, which cost us at least $800 billion, probably more, was a mistake. It was a mistake as a matter of national security. It was certainly a mistake given our economic situation. Afghanistan has not turned out that well. I will tell you, I think, with great directness that I'm quite convinced that had I been in the U.S. Senate in the last 10 years, I would have voted against the war in Iraq. On the other hand, I probably would have voted to go forward in Afghanistan. And I admit that it hasn't turned out that well over the long term. I think the way it should have been done and what I would have been voting to do is go after those elements in al-Qaeda that were responsible for the attack on the United States and get that job done as efficiently and fast as possible, maybe build a couple of bridges for the people of Afghanistan, a little infrastructure, and leave. It should have been done quickly. You know, as it turned out, it didn't work that way, and it's not looking good after 10 years.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. We have a listener from Peaks Island who wants to know where you would stand with respect to being for or against U.S. or Israeli attack upon Iran's nuclear infrastructure in the event that sanctions and negotiations don't have an impact.
That is a terrible choice for us to face. I tell you that if I was serving in the Senate, I would tend to want to give great deference to the commander-in-chief because I would expect that the team evaluating it from there would have the best possible information. But we do know that we can't turn over all of national security to the president, and I would be very skeptical that any attack on the infrastructure, nuclear infrastructure in Iran would work out well. I think that the many scenarios suggest that it would not be successful, and we would get ourselves into a much worse situation.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. John Hink is a Democrat running for U.S. Senate. 1-800-399-3566 to Round Pond and Richard. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question is, should the Glass-Steagall Act be reinstated that was changed back in Reagan's era? And the second question is whether congressional benefits should be the same as all U.S. government employees.
Richard, can I ask you what the Glass-Steagall Act was? I'm sorry for my ignorance.
Glass-Steagall Act was started in the Great Recession back in the 30s. That separated the different banking institutions from those that were investing their own money versus the customer's money. And that got overturned by Graham and two other Republicans into what permitted the merger of Citicorp and Travelers?
John?
Hi, Richard. Nice question. Yes, we should reinstate Glass-Steagall and repeal Graham, Leach, Bliley in order to bar excessive horizontal integration of insurance companies, investment banks, and commercial banks. We really need to end the too-big-to-fail financial institution situation that we now have, where even if we don't like it, we are forced as a country to bail out these entities because of the impact their failure would have on our economy. It seems to me we've learned that lesson. Congress has not responded adequately. It needs to be done.
And, Richard, the second part was on congressional benefits?
Yes, retirement benefits in particular. And all the same restrictions that normal people have put on them as far as insider trading, those are bundled together as privileges that I'm wondering, have they gone astray, or would you continue business as usual?
No, I'm against business as usual. It does seem to me as though Congress gets a generous, the members of Congress get a generous salary and a number of other perks that are more than adequate. We should be requiring the best and highest standards of integrity. They should not have the opportunity to do insider trading, as 60 Minutes pointed out to us, was the current situation. We should, whenever possible, put Congress in the same basic situation as the American people, for example, in healthcare and any number of other areas. I would consistently support that.
Richard, thanks so much for joining the program today. You can join the conversation with John Hank, Democrat for Senate as well, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Do you support or oppose same-sex marriage?
I support same-sex marriage.
And I want to also get to sort of a bigger question that was fairly specific, but a big question about, and you mentioned your the person that you're running to replace, Senator Snowe, who in exiting the Senate after so many years, I guess kind of lamented changes that she perceived in the Senate in terms of I guess how nasty it had become and how difficult it had become, and the loss of decorum and that sort of thing. Do you perceive that what she was lamenting in the Senate has happened, and should we do something about it?
I think Senator Snowe was correct in what she said. I actually had the opportunity on a couple of occasions in my career to lobby Congress, including the U.S. Senate. The first was in the early 80s when I worked on clean air. And I lobbied with the Clean Air Coalition. I actually had the opportunity to lobby the good senator from Maine, George Mitchell. And we were still in the recent aftermath of the great work that Ed Muskie had done on environmental laws. Ed Muskie deserves the credit that he gets for these phenomenal laws, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and others. Remarkably enough, he did that work hand in hand with Howard Baker, Republican from Tennessee. It seems that would not occur today, and I think Olympia was going to that change when she criticized the tone and the partisan divide in the Senate. She is right. However, what Olympia did not say and is also fundamentally problematic with how our government is working is, over time, the most powerful entities, those with the greatest vested interest in all the decision-making, have gained more and more control over the political process, over elections, and the deck is stacked against the average person. And that part is just as important. It's not good enough just to get people together and meet in the middle. In fact, that mistake of going into Iraq and declaring war, we didn't declare war, but allowing the American invasion of Iraq, and that and the Bush tax cuts and Medicare Part D, those three things gave us the deficit problem we have today. And they were all centrist positions. They were voted on equally by Democrats and Republicans. I'm not sure if I got that right, that it's equal, but many members of both parties voted on those, and they were terrible mistakes. So it's not simply good enough to have the members work together. They have to work together in the interests of ordinary people.
All right, we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your questions and comments for John Hink, Democrat for U.S. Senate. Please stay with us.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you who called or pledged online during our Super Thursday one-day membership campaign. Over 3,750 of you stepped forward, including over 660 new members. The result, a vote of confidence, over $370,000 raised in support of the programming you value, a record for MPBN Radio. The other result, of course, is that the membership campaign is not in progress right now, today, and tomorrow, and the next day, on air during your favorite programming. Thank you for that. We're also planning for another one-day campaign in place of the usual week-long event this summer. So again, thank you. You make MPBN possible.
Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Main Calling is made possible by listeners like you and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business. Garand.com. By Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. And by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Your Vote 2012 conversation with John Hink, Democrat for U.S. Senate. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, or tweet at Maine Calling. Let's go now to Augusta and Susan. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was just wondering if, John, if you think that we should go back to the gold standard.
There's certainly something tempting about the idea of going back to the gold standard because it suggests something more rock solid and greater security. I have a feeling that my understanding of economics, it would be impractical to go to the gold standard at this point, and I'm not sure that it's necessary for us to keep our monetary and fiscal house in order. I would like to believe that the government could act responsibly without making those kinds of moves. But, again, any one of us who gets an opportunity to serve in government should keep an open mind to any suggestions that could possibly make things work better than they are today.
Susan, are you a supporter of going back to the gold standard?
Yes, I am.
And can I ask why?
Well, because when economies, you see them, unfortunately, what had happened in Greece, when you see what, and unfortunately, I hope it doesn't happen with us. I don't think it will. But I think we have a chance to have a little stronger backbone monetarily if we have a gold standard. I think it would help more than hurt. But it's certainly, nice to be able to get some different input from that. If I may, if I could ask you, John, just another very quick one. How do you feel? It seems to be right now that everybody seems to want to fix Social Security. I feel that if the U.S. government would keep their hands out of Social Security and quit stealing from Peter to pay Paul, we'd still have what we had once before. But do you have any suggestions as far as having the government stay away from Social Security and finding some other way to pay these deficits that we have instead of dipping their hands into Social Security.
Susan, I agree with you that the government should not be borrowing from the Social Security Trust Fund in order to take care of some short-term financial demand. We should have a much more long-term vision on how we handle the finances. You know, at its root, I see the Social Security system as a contract between generations in America, and we may need to figure out how to make Social Security work better, and it may involve some changes. However, I would not look at those lightly because I feel as though people have paid into it with the understanding that it would provide for them a certain basic standard of living after retirement, and people count on it. I don't think we have the moral right to shake that and to take it away.
1-800-399-3566 to speak with John Hink, Democrat for U.S. Senate to Biddeford and Loretta. Hi, Loretta.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I have a question for John, which is with regard to PACs. I recently read a book called Money in the House by Marion Curander. I think it's one of the best books I've read in the last decade. And in it, she describes that virtually every committee, every member of the House, Republican, Democrat, and the Senate, has to buy into the PACs that are governed by committee members, heads of committees, and it makes K Street look like small potatoes. And I'm wondering what he's willing to do, number one, in terms of the PAC money that's infiltrated Congress, and number two, and I think I've asked him about this before, if he would be interested in promoting states' rights with regard to money, and that anybody that runs for candidacy in the state of Maine for the federal or state government should only take money that emanates from the state of Maine.
All right, let's start with the PAC question first, John.
I do believe the PACs are creating a great challenge to a democracy to even function. It is harming our system to a great degree. It was bad enough before Citizens United. It has been made worse by that decision. And as I said earlier, I would like to see it changed and reversed. It seems to me that what we want is for the voters, the real voters, to be the major players in our democracy, not the people with the biggest political war chest. And I would do anything possible to reverse that and change it.
And Loretta, the other part of your question is about limiting the campaign spending to only money from within the state that you're representing?
That's correct. And if Maine were to lead in this, I'm hoping that other states would do so. I have friends on the West Coast that are looking into it, from the Midwest, from Illinois. And I'm wondering if maybe Maine can be first. In other words, if you're going to be elected into an office in the Maine legislature or in the U.S., Senate or House, you only run on money that emanates from the state of Maine.
I think that's a great idea. It's interesting. I don't recall hearing anyone propose that before. Off the top of my head, I'm wondering if the United States Supreme Court might determine that that runs afoul of the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution. It seems to me that elections should be viewed differently from commerce. But that may not be the approach that they would take. But as a practical matter, how much better it would be if we had that kind of a rule in place, the elections in Maine would be humbler and more oriented toward ordinary voters. And I like that.
Let's go to Jim in Portland. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question for you, sir. I'm hoping you can make it easy for me and for people that I know of to support you. And here's what I'll ask. What sort of, you know, what would you say to someone who is definitely not a fan of the right-wing social agenda, But you know, I've done some graduate study in economics, and the more I learned, the more I realized that perhaps the longstanding leftmost financial policies might actually need some improvement as well. I'm hoping you could speak to how you might sort of get my vote that way.
Well, to tell you the truth, Jim, I hope that I'm generally in sync with that. In terms of the right-wing social agenda, you know, people have obviously a range of moral beliefs and religious beliefs, and they, of course, should be entitled to those, and they should be entitled to persuade people and do whatever they feel they could do to reach out to people and convince them of their views. However, they should not be using government to control other people's lives with their moral beliefs, and it's offensive to me when that occurs, and we should resist it. And there's not enough resistance to it in our government today. We see too many of those constraints coming down from government because somebody's got a moral agenda that you may not share. On the other side, I think that we have to live within our means. I'm open to making sure that we keep the footprint of government relatively small. It should be doing no more than it needs to do to take care of the functions that are best done by government. But then we should also pay for those, and that requires taxation. So there's a balance there, and we need to achieve it much better than we have.
To Scarborough now, and Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. John, I'm wondering about what I see as the militarization of our economy and our foreign policy. It seems that the so-called defense establishment has its a grip on everything in every community, every congressional district. There are, you know, so-called defense facilities or manufacturing plants or what have you. How do you see us breaking that pattern and getting our resources devoted to more productive enterprises?
John?
It's Barbara, right?
Yes.
It seems as though this is precisely what President Eisenhower warned of when he was stepping down, and I think there was great truth and foresight in that warning. He referred to it as the military-industrial complex. It seems to me what we should do is analyze our security needs and interests carefully and make sure that we have a robust defense, that no one is challenged to take on the United States. However, extending our military all over the earth and trying to control activities that are remote from this country, part of that is probably our reliance on foreign oil and the important part that that plays in our economy and the global economy.
Just a few seconds left. Sorry to interrupt. But, you know, if there were proposed cuts, for example, in the Navy destroyer program that affected Bath Iron Works, is your allegiance to save money, to balance the budget, or to protect jobs at Bath Iron Works?
You know, fortunately, someone from Maine would be in a good position because Bath Iron Works is doing a great job at what they do, and it's they should win competitively among their competitors. In fact, Kittery the same way. I also think there's a good argument to be made for geographically for naval presence in this corner of our continental United States. So there may not be that great a conflict there.
John Hink, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Keith.
John Hink's a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. We'll speak with the other Democratic candidates and Republican candidates for Senate in the coming days and weeks. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. Lindsay Maynard ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of the show by visiting mpbn.net. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by listeners like you and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business. Garand.com. By Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. And by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME. This is listener-supported MPBN Radio, also online at mpbn.net. The Maine Public Broadcasting Network was founded